So we have gotten to the section last week. David took on a very large problem. Anybody remember what that was? Goliath, very good. And hopefully we learned some new things about that particular issue, that we changed it from a children's story into a real story. That, David, a man of faith, a man that trusted God. We learned a lot about David in the beginning years of his character, who is a man probably in the neighborhood, guesstimating, probably in the area of probably about 15 years old, takes on this giant with faith and resolve. And who is this uncircumcised Philistine that's popping off about the God of my forefathers? And he goes out there, and you remember that Goliath, got stoned. And, that just shows you that can be hazardous to your health. So anyway, you know the story. So now David has moved from being a shepherd to a warrior. But a true shepherd's heart will never leave you, even if you become a warrior. And so tonight, we're going to get into something that you're going to find to be very, very interesting. David has defeated Goliath. And you and I both know that after we have had a great victory, that's when the real tests come. After we've had a victory, then the testing comes to take a look at your character. Because as I was watching a special this morning, we've all heard the stories of people that win the lotteries and how it destroys people's lives many times. And there was a special on this morning about, people that win the lotteries and how they were interviewing this one guy that had, I think it was $16.5 million, and he went through it and nothing flattened, and he ended up bankrupt, and, he had everybody after him. And you see, once you hit it big, then your character gets revealed. Sometimes after some of our great tests, and then we have a victory, then okay, let's take a look at your character. Are you going to start to think more of yourself than you should? Are you going to start to think you did it with your own power, your own abilities? Are we going to begin to think that, I don't really need God anyway? We would never say that, but is that the mentality that would start to come? And so character is often, character is who we are when no one else is around. When no one's watching, that's where our character is. And so let's take a look, because now David, truly, we already know he's been anointed to be the king. But he needs to be prepared for that position. He needs to go through some schooling. And all of us as Christians are going to fit into this chapter. All of us as Christians must go through this same school that David is in order for us to be of use to the kingdom of God. And so let's take a look and see what's happening here. And let's kind of follow along with David as he gets placed into school. So chapter 18, verse 1. Now, when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day, David, and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him, and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. Now, all of us have probably at some time, or at least many of us guys, had blood brothers. Where you poke your finger with a knife or something and you become a blood brother with somebody. Somebody that was you can look back in your life that was your best friend. And here we see that something takes place between David and Jonathan. Understand, Jonathan was older. But here is something that's radical. Jonathan saw something in David. He saw a character in David that he knew. This guy, there's something about him that I like. There's something about him that's unique. There's a faithfulness. Because you remember, Jonathan had this kind of faith in God. Jonathan said, hey, if God is for us, we can take the Philistines, whether it's just two of us or a whole army. It doesn't matter to God. Jonathan had that kind of faith. He sees in David a giant killer. Jonathan himself was a giant killer. So these two guys clicked in the realm of the spirit. And you and I both know that when and before we were Christians, any of us, that if you had, whether it was a girlfriend or one of a buddy that you had, it is totally different than a soul friend. And so here, these two guys are joined at the soul because of their, both of them have this amazing faith in God. And what's radical here is that when Jonathan took off his robe, understand, he is the king's son. He's the next one in line to take the throne. He's the heir to the throne. And this is an interesting message. When he gave him his robe, and when you give your armor and you give your sword to someone, that is like saying, we are now brothers, but there's a hidden message in there that even Jonathan, this is almost like a prophecy. It was almost like saying, I am the heir to the throne, but unknowingly he was saying, but I think you're going to be the one that's going to take it. It was almost a prophetic message that he was giving. But what's interesting is for you and for me that even though we understand that, you know, as I've shared with you, that David is a type or a picture of Jesus who is to come. Interesting, Jonathan kind of is a picture of hopefully you and me. Because here we see that David, just like Jesus, defeated the enemy of our soul. And what then does Jonathan do? He says, I'm going to give you everything that I have, and I'm going to cling to you because you're the giant killer. And so it is for me and for you that, you know, all of us in this room, we can look to our David, our Jesus, our Savior, who is, we can look at him, we say, you defeated the enemy. Now I'm going to give you everything that I have, and I'm going to follow you. And I want my soul to be knit to yours. Interesting picture. And so it's interesting that, you know, he withheld nothing from him and neither should we. And so, interesting now, David's shepherd's heart is going to begin to be developed. At this point, from where we left off to the next point, we're going to allow anywhere from 10 to 15 years or so to go by. So, you know, David is now 20 to 25 years old when we move into this next section. David's been around for a while. And so he's now going to enter the school of ministry. He's been in it all along, but now it's almost like God is saying, okay, David, you're old enough. It's almost time for you to take the throne. I'm going to start to test you. His character was what was developed in private. Remember when he fought the bear and he fought the lion? And then in public, it came out. Character now is also going to begin to be seen in David. Let me show you what I'm talking about. So, verse 5, David went out wherever Saul sent him. So would we agree that that is faithfulness, submitted heart, and he behaved wisely. And so, if you will, Saul set him over the men of war. And he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of all of Saul's servants. So as we begin to see, first of all, we see now David, the giant killer, is now been promoted. He's been faithfully, you know, he's playing the harp for Saul when he has this problem. He is now a faithful man. Whatever Saul gives him to do, he's wise and he does what he's asked to do. So he's a submitted servant to the king. Even though all of us know, and David knows, because we've seen this early on, David knows he's the guy that's going to be the next king. Samuel already told him, I'm anointing you to be the next king over Israel. And so David doesn't use that as leverage to say, Saul, by the way, do you know who I am? Do you know what Samuel did to me? He never brings it up. That's radical. Never brings it up. A faithful servant, wise servant, an assistant. Saul now makes him a bodyguard, and he makes him the leader or the commander over all of his army. So David has been promoted to a very high position. And so it's an amazing thing. David never tried to promote himself. Not one time did he buck or kick for position. God is moving him, if you will, up the ranks because he's needing to develop this man that's going to be the king. And so, verse 6, now it happened, as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines and with joy and with musical instruments, something that they would do regularly, kind of like to greet the troops home. Everybody comes out, they're going crazy. But the emphasis is the women. So the women sang as they danced, and they said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. So as they're singing and dancing, yay, Saul, you're home. Yes, Saul, you've killed the thousands. David, you're 10,000s. And they're singing and dancing, and they're cheering on the troops, and they're singing to Saul, and they're singing to David. And so here comes test number one. You can write this down next to that verse. Popularity. Popularity. In Proverbs chapter 27, I put a bookmark on mine, so I'll read it to you. You can jot it down there. Proverbs 27:21 says this: the refining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, and a man is valued by what others say of him. Notice David isn't coming in popping off about how great he is. He isn't coming in saying, yes, look at the notches in my belt. I killed 10,000s. He's not flashing, you know, his sword, or he doesn't come walking in with his, you know, Arnold Terminator, you know, bullet vest or anything like that, right? He's not coming in saying anything. The people praise David, but yet, let's see. What is the test? Popularity. Very interesting, radical test that every single one of us are going to have to face at some point in our Christian walk. And so, interesting, let's see what happens. Remember that Saul is a picture of what? You guys remember? He's a type of life in the flesh. David is a picture or a type of life in the spirit. So always remember that as we're watching these two guys. And let's take a look. So, verse 8, Saul was very angry. And the saying, what saying? What the girls were saying, Saul has killed his thousands, David his 10,000, displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s. To me, they have ascribed only thousands. Now, what more can he have but the kingdom? So watch what Saul does. Watch what the flesh, you see what the flesh is already doing, whining, sniveling, jealousy. But watch what happens. So Saul eyed David from that day forward. And that word, that phrase in the Hebrew is literally Saul eyed David critically. He watched him with a critical eye from that day forward. And so here we see the first test of popularity. David comes in. The girls are singing. The girls are dancing. Yes, look at David. He's the man. And we don't see David going, yeah, well, now that you mention it, I am. So Saul, you know, I'd like my own quarters now. I'd like a raise. You know, now that you've seen that the girls want me, David didn't say, you, meet me at my quarters tonight. We're having dinner. It's all on me. David did not respond to this praise that was being given to him. Instead, what we see is Saul is the one that responds. And how does he respond? With jealousy. His insecurity is starting to come apart now. It's starting to be revealed. His insecurity starts flying out. And you know what? One of the things that we will learn is jealousy and pride, really those two are synonymous with self-centeredness. Those two things go together. They really are at the very core of what is jealousy and what is pride. And so Saul, being this picture of the flesh, he gets jealous. So let that be a hint to you and to me. Let that be a lesson for us, that if we are feeling jealous, or if we are feeling, if you will, our pride of, whoa, who do they think they are? How come he's getting it? If that comes out, if that begins to surface in you or in me, understand that that equals self-centeredness and pride at its core. It's a fascinating picture as we see how David, living this holy life in the Spirit, and it causes fear in Saul, the backslider. Fascinating picture. But David stands in front of the people. He does not take the popularity. He doesn't flash himself in front of the girls. He doesn't, you know, start demanding the praise. The people are praising him. David gets praised. He becomes popular, and he doesn't let it go to his head. He continues to faithfully serve Saul. And I'm telling you, the moment that you or I, in our sphere of ministry, the moment that people begin to see, it's a funny thing, you guys. It's an amazing thing how the moment that you or I have a victory, how it changes people's perspective of who we are. I think I told you guys this at one time. I was up at Calvary Chapel Montebello, and I was sitting, you know, in the audience. I like to sit and worship. And I had my little headphone, just like this one, only I had it down so that it's not up there, you know. It's kind of a funky thing for me to get used to anyway, you know what I mean? I feel like I need a job at Burger King. But anyway, all the sound people, they say it's better and all that stuff. So right before we got ready, I knew it was getting close to the end. I put it on and made the adjustment and everything. And then at the last minute, they says, hey, why don't you stand up and say hello to somebody? And so I did, and I turned around and shake the guy's hand, right? And so then, right after that, they introduced me, and I go up. So after the thing was done, I go back to the chair where Mari was sitting, and they release everybody. And the guy that was sitting behind me goes, I want to apologize to you. And I said, for what? And he said, I saw you with the little thing on, and I was thinking, what jerk is going to wear his cell phone into the church like this? And then he says, you didn't tell me you were the pastor. And I said, what difference does it make, man? What difference does it make, you know? And so it's a funny thing what happens, that the moment that you get put into a position where you are elevated in front of people, instantly praise and popularity, you're going to be tested by it. How will it affect us? David passes the test. Why? Because he doesn't gravitate towards it and want more of it. David maintains his integrity. He is who he is, and he doesn't allow the praise or the popularity of the people to change him as a person. Amazing. It can ruin people. Let's take a look at the next test as we see what happens in the next one. And so, verse 10, it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand, as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice. So the next thing that we see happening with David is a test that all of us are going to face, and usually happens after we've become popular. Or when you've been tested with praise of people, is rejection or persecution. So here's the next test for David. As he stands in front of the, you know, as he comes in, as David comes in and they say, David, Saul's going through one of his things. He's having one of his migraines or whatever it was. So David runs, and what does he do? He runs and he grabs his harp and he runs in to minister to Saul. So with harp in hand, he is preparing to minister to the king. And what is in Saul's hand? A spear. David comes walking in. There he is. Whew, throws it at David. David, you can imagine, whoa, it sticks into the wall, right? You know, imagine that. All of a sudden, bing, you know, and you're going, whoa, where did that come from? And he's now beginning to get the picture that Saul's not liking him very much, you see. And so the sword sticks into the wall. He's all, pin David to the wall. But it's interesting that at that particular moment, you know, as David is trying to minister with a you know, with the harp in his hand, Saul's got a spear in his hand, and he aims to kill David. And so instead of just dealing with his own heart and the source of what's causing this problem, David now has come upon the scene, and he goes, I hate that guy. Jealousy is now leading to a path of trying to destroy the one who is more popular, if you will, than he is. And he throws a spear. So it's an interesting picture as David again passes this beautiful test, because if it would have been me, now I don't know about you guys, but a sword comes flying at me, fling, and I'm ducking out of the way, I would be pulling out of the wall saying, yeah, and I would have thrown it back. And here's what David did not do. He refused to become a spear chucker and throw it back. Now for me and for you, think about it for just a minute. Even though we would never probably see someone throwing spears at us, literally, how many of us have been face to face with persecution where someone throws a spear of criticism or someone throws a spear of a harsh word or a negative comment or a gossip? And the first thing we want to do is pull that spear out of the wall and throw it back. Oh, yeah? Well, you think I'm a jerk? Well, you're an idiot. Let me tell you what you do. Someone throws a spear at you on the freeways and cuts you off and puts the brakes on. What's the first thing we want to do? You see, it's really not literal spears any longer that we throw at each other. It's words that we throw, that we let fly. It's harsh things that we want to say. And how do we respond? You understand, we are not responsible. Was David responsible for the way that Saul felt about him? No. Had David done anything wrong other than minister to Saul? No. Nothing. So was David responsible for the way that Saul felt about him? No. What was David responsible for? How he chose to respond back to Saul. And so, interestingly enough, that is what Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, that's what Jesus was dealing with. When he says, you know, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, what are we to do? Turn the other cheek. You see, you're not responsible for what people say. You're not responsible for the spears that they're going to throw at us. We are not responsible for that. We are only responsible for how we choose to respond back. Are we going to be negative right back? Are we going to be critical right back? You want to know where more spears are probably thrown than anywhere else in the world? Between husbands and wives. And yet, what will we do when someone throws the spear? Will we say, like David, whoa, and take that harp and continue to try to minister? Or will we drop the heart of harp of ministry and grab the spear and try and throw it back? You can't do both. You understand that? You can't be playing and ministering and throwing spears at the same time. It's impossible. And so David passes this beautiful test. His character is coming out. God is revealing, he is showing a contrast between two people. The flesh wants to put an end to the things of the spirit, but the spirit will always have victory. David, walking in the Spirit, passes this test once again. Beautiful picture as he continues on in the school of ministry. And so, look what happens next. Look at the next test. Now Saul was afraid of David. Why? Because the Lord was with him. Saul's starting to get an understanding. And it's interesting how, you know, as I said a moment ago, you know, David living this holy life in the Spirit, and it will cause fear, especially in the backslider. If you are living a holy life, walking in the Spirit, especially people that are backslidden, that you will drive them nuts. Take it from a once backslider who Christians used to drive me nuts. Because as a man that got saved in the eighth grade, you know, and then walked away from the Lord, you know, later on in my life, backsliders hate spirit-filled Christians, man. You guys drive.
Oh, no, here he comes. Okay, well, hope he didn't see me. I'm going to just sneak out the door.
I didn't want to have any kind of confrontation with that. And so we see that the same thing. I mean, what was happening between David and Saul, it's the same thing that will happen between you and others. Because they can know, they will be able to see the Lord is with them. I hope they see that. We're going to talk more about that here in a few minutes. So, the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Therefore, verse 13, Saul removed him from his presence and made him his captain over 1,000. But David went in and out and came in before the people. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. And that literally in the Hebrew should have been translated, even more afraid of him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. Verse 16, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. So, do you understand what just happened? The next test that David faces is demotion. He gets demoted. Now, let me ask you a question. Has David done anything wrong yet? Nothing. Not one thing wrong. Everything he is doing, he is above reproach. This is by the hand of God, you guys. God is saying, at this particular point, all of a sudden, because Saul becomes jealous, Saul becomes, the flesh gets jealous, the flesh gets bitter. And so now he says, I know what I'll do. I'll cut this guy down. Then he'll quit. He'll quit on me. That's it. If I can't, everybody around sees that David is this, you know, popular man, that he's this great warrior. So what I'll do is I'll demote him and I'll make him want to quit. And so what did David do? Instead of being now Saul's bodyguard, instead of being over the entire army, he says, David, you're only over 1,000 guys now. I'm giving your new job away to somebody else. Abner, come here. You're going to be the new man. You get your old job back, so to speak. And so David then, what do we see? David says, oh, this is stinking dumb. That's it. I quit. If that's the way it is going to be, after I've given my heart, my soul for you, and I've killed people, and I've fought armies, and I've fought for you, that's it then. If this is the way it is, I'm out of here. Fine. That's it. I'm turning in my 2-week notice. Do you see David do that? No. What does he do? He takes the 1,000 that Saul gives him, and he turns them into, you know, literally like, you know, the first David SEAL team. They become crack fighters trained under the hand of David. He becomes the most, this group of 1,000 become the most fearless group of all of the armies of Israel under David's leadership. So David takes this and he says, okay, well, this is interesting. I don't know why. Did you see David question? Why, Saul? What's up with you? Why are you demoting me? Did David do that? No. What did David do? Okay, Lord, I trust you that this is from you. So he then says, I will take this 1,000 and I'm going to make them the best fighting force that Israel has ever known. And he pours himself as he was before, even more so now. That's radical, you guys. That's an amazing victory for David. He could have easily quit. He could have run. He could have thrown in the towel. He could have got angry. He could have become bitter. He could have become resentful. He could have even tried to take Saul out because he says, hey, I'm the next king anyway. Why don't I just expedite this process? I'll take him out myself. No, instead, what does he do? He refused to throw back the spear. He refuses to become bitter. And even when he's being demoted, he stands up and he says, I'm going to continue to serve the Lord with all of my heart. Colossians 3 says, whatsoever you do it with all of your heart as unto the Lord. Christians of all people should be the hardest working people that work in your office or your profession, whatever it is that you do. Unfortunately, that is not what I hear as a pastor. Unfortunately, what I hear from people out in the places, I'll never hire Christians. Yeah, them, you know, those Christians, man, they think they, you know, you, especially from Christian employers. That's even sadder yet when I hear Christian people saying, I don't want to hire Christians because they think that just because they're a Christian, I'm a Christian, that they work less. That breaks my heart, man. We as Christians should be the hardest working, you know, employees in your profession. People should be able to look at you and look at me, and they should be able to say, whoa, what's up with that dude? He's here early, he stays late, he works hard. He doesn't goof off like everybody else does. Well, you know, he's one of those Jesus freaks. Ah, that's why. That's what David did. And even when we get looked over or we get demoted because we're Christians, will we then give less? We shouldn't. We should be the people that says, all right, well, I don't understand why what just happened, but you know what? I understand that that's probably a test from God to see what my character is going to be like, so I'm going to even work harder than ever before. And I'm going to take the responsibility that's been given to me, and I'm going to make this department the best department in all the company. You see what I'm saying, gang? It's an amazing test of character. Believe it or not, before I, you know, my pastor, I didn't even know it, and that's why this is so much fun for me to teach, that before I became a pastor, I was tested by every single one of these things. We didn't know it. My pastor even tried the thing. I was in charge of the men's ministry here many, many years ago. And, you know, we were doing men's breakfast once a month and bringing in guest speakers, and we were having fun. And all of a sudden, my pastor calls me and he says, Rob, you're not in charge of the men's ministry anymore. And I said, why? Did I do something wrong? No, just don't want you to do it anymore. Okay, well, what about the breakfast that we have? He goes, cancel the rest of them. So I'm thinking, uh-oh, you know what I do to tick them off? And I said, well, you know, what do you want me to do next? He goes, I don't want you to do anything. I just want you to stay by me. Just come, just hang out, just stay by me. So I went, okay. Now, I didn't know it, but he was testing me to see, would I quit, would I run, would I go to another church, all this. I didn't know. And I didn't, obviously, because you're stuck with me, okay? But this was a process that my pastor put me through to see, what's he going to do? You know, because that's where your character is seen, when you get what feels like a demotion. But in God's perspective, it's really a promotion. Do you understand the difference? Because God's saying, I want to move you up. How can I move you up? I'm going to move you down in what the world sees, but in all reality, you're being moved up, because if you do it right with character, then the rest of the world sees, wow, that's cool. And that's how we pass that same test. It's an amazing thing. And so, you know, Saul sees that the hand of God is on David. It was no longer on him. And instead of trying to find out what happened, instead of trying to find out why, he tries to kill David. He tries to get rid of him. And so it's an amazing picture, you guys. And something that for me is very interesting, that when I ponder on these kind of things, something that kind of came into my mind tonight, but you know what? Let's finish. Let's keep going, and I'll share it with you when we finish. So now look what happens. Here comes the next one. So we've had three so far, three different tests that David's had: popularity, rejection, or if you will, persecution, demotion. Now watch what happens. Then Saul said to David, here is my older daughter, Merab. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, let my hand not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. So in other words, hey, David, here's my daughter, but first of all, I need you to go out and fight some battles. Because Saul's thinking, hey, I'll just let him get killed in battle, and then I'm done with this guy. Now, what's fascinating here is This also shows something of the nature of Saul. Do you remember what he promised to the person who killed Goliath? He promised one of his daughters to the man that would kill him a reward and a tax-free living for the, you know, for his house. Saul never came through with the promise to David until now, 10 to 15 years later. Probably somebody went up and said, "Hey, dude, did you ever give David a wife? I mean, you remember you promised him that." "Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, we can use this." Saul the conniver. "So here's what we'll do. We'll send him out into the battle against the Philistines." And so, look at how David responds. Instead of David saying, "What are you up to, dog? How come now all of a sudden you're starting to bring Mirab around? I mean, she's a fine babe. But I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think I'd be trusting Saul right now. He's thrown a spear at you. Not one, not just once. You'll see later on. He does it to David several times. And then all of a sudden he demotes him. Okay, wait a minute here. I'm not getting this. Now all of a sudden you want me to be, you know, you're going to put me in a part of your family? I'd be saying, "I don't think so, dude." Look at David. So David said to Saul, "Who am I? And what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be son-in-law to the king?" So David looks at that and says, "Oh, Saul, are you serious? Wow." You see, you know why David could respond that way, you guys? Because he has refused to allow bitterness to brew in his heart. He is refusing to allow resentment to build. So that when Saul says, "David, by the way, here's my daughter. Remember I promised to the guy that kills Goliath? Here you go." David goes, "Are you serious? You want me? I mean, I'll get to be a part of the king's family? I'm not worthy of such an honor." If he was full of bitterness and resentment, he would have never responded that way. You see? So David is free because he is refusing to allow bitterness to dwell in his heart. But there is something going on behind the scenes. There is something sinister happening. But interesting, how should we respond to the fact that we get to be related to the king? Wow, Lord, as much of a scoundrel as I have been, I mean, David's done nothing wrong. And yet God allows you and he allows me to be a part of his family. Man, we should be saying, "Wow, Lord, you're going to let me be a part of that? Whoa, this is awesome. What a privilege." So, verse 19, "But it happened at the time when Mirab, Saul's daughter, should be given to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Maholathite, as a wife." So David's getting his tux fitted. He's getting his black patent leather sandals shined. And all of a sudden somebody comes to David and says, "David, there's a wedding." I know, it was mine, man. "No, David, the woman that Saul promised you as a wife, he just gave her to somebody else." What? Disappointment. The next test. How do we handle disappointment? How do we handle when something falls apart? How do we handle things when what we perceive, what we want, suddenly falls apart right in front of us? How do you deal with disappointment, man? What happens when we get disappointed? David, you know, is fighting the Lord's battles. He is doing exactly what God has asked him to do. And look at the circumstance that takes place. And right there, in an effort to spite or to rifle David, he cuts his legs out from underneath him. Has that ever happened to you yet? Oh, it's happened to me. And right at the minute, how does David respond? Does David say, "That's it, man. I've had it with this punk. I'm going to go deal with him this." Not David. Not David. He looks at this and he basically is understanding, "Well, Lord, my life is in your hands. So you obviously are doing something here that I don't understand. So I'm going to continue to follow you." David passes the test of disappointment. Let me tell you something, gang. All of us in this room are going to face disappointment at some time. "Oh, man, that was the house we wanted, but the loan didn't go through. They sold it right before we got it." How do you deal with that? how do we deal with the disappointments of our life? You're going to see them. What are you going to do with it? You're going to get bitter. You're going to become resentful. We're going to become those that say, Lord, my life is in your hands. I'm going to keep moving forward. Look what happens next. Now Michal, or Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Now anything that pleases Saul, that is going to be something that, if you will, if it pleases him, it can't be good. Right? Because Saul's in the flesh. Hey, David, or Saul, did you know that Michal, your daughter, loves David? Oh, really? That's a good thing. So right now we know what's up. Something sinister is going on. Watch. So Saul said, I'll give her to him that she may be a snare to him. So obviously Michal was a brat. It wasn't that she was, oh, no, 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 I'm not letting her go. I mean, that's my pride and joy. That's my baby. I mean, she's an awesome kid. She was probably the problem child of the family. She was probably the little brat. She was probably the little punk that caused Saul a bunch of problems. That girl's a snare, man. Good. We'll give her to David. We're going to let her be a snare to him. Now, we're going to find out what kind of snare she is later on, because she becomes this critical girl. She actually is going to, in all reality, try to become a snare to David's worship of the Lord. When we get later on, when David brings the Ark of the Covenant back into the city and David's just going ballistic, you know, he takes off his robe and he's dancing around. And then Michal, if you remember, is looking down upon David going, oh, fine display the king is today. David comes walking in and she says, well, aren't you Mr. So-and-so, dancing in your underwear in front of all the girls? And she despised his worship. We'll get to that when we get there. But I believe that that was the snare that she tried to become, the snare of David's worship. And so, look what happens though. So he says, yeah, give her that bratty little girl that I've got. Oh, that's a perfect setup. But so Saul commanded his servants. Oh, excuse me, we got to go back. Verse 21. And so Saul said, I'll give her to him that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. So he's using the Philistines. Like, man, David keeps going out. He kills these guys. I want them to kill him. Therefore Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law today. And Saul commanded his servants, communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king has delight in you, and all his servants love you. Now, therefore, become the king's son-in-law. Now, let me ask you guys a question. Would you start to wonder if something's wrong with this picture? I mean, it almost seems like, man, David, are you stupid? But this just shows you the relationship that David had with God. He said, hey, I am in the king's house. I know that God has anointed me to be the king. I don't understand what this is going on, but I'm going to trust that God is in control. And so Saul's servants spoke those words, verse 23, in the hearing of David. And David said, does it seem to you a light thing to be the king's son-in-law, seeing I am a poor and lightly esteemed man? Do you see this heart and the character of David, you guys? I mean, this is so not me. And the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. So they went back and they tell this to Saul. Now, interestingly enough, jot this down next to verse 22, 23, that it's a sad thing that David remembered this little thing, because right now what we're dealing with is the test of being deceived. And interestingly enough, David is going to use this tactic on someone else later on, a gentleman by the name of Uriah the Hittite. So sadly enough, David remembers this and he tries it on somebody else. And so then Saul, verse 25, said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines. This is going to be a PG-13 section now. To take vengeance on the king's enemies. But you see, really what Saul was doing is he sought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistine. I'll send David out. Because obviously, I hope you understand that in order to get this, it ain't going to happen while somebody's alive. You know what I'm saying? These guys ain't going to say, sure, go ahead, David. You know, I mean, this is not, okay, understand where we are here, people, okay? So, when his servants told these things to David, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now, the days had not expired. Therefore, David arose and went, he and his men, and he killed 200 men of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, and he gave them in full count to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave Michal to him as a wife. Now, this is interesting, you guys. Who counted them? And understand, this is before rubber gloves, okay? So to me, this is a weird passage. You know, David being the warrior that he is, he says, okay, fellas, we got these guys dead. We need to do a little surgery. You do it, okay? And then coming back, you know, do you think Saul said, somebody count him up right now? I think he took him at his word. You know what I'm saying? Because this is one. I see this stuff in my crazy mind, man. It's a weird thing. So, verse 28. Then Saul knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war, and so it was whenever they went out that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. So when David is tested with deception, did you notice what happened? Saul says, David, here's the deal. I want you to go get me 100 foreskins of the Philistines. In other words, go kill me for 100 of them, and then you can have my daughter. Now, this shows you the character of Saul. He promised a daughter to the one that would kill Goliath. That was the deal. He brings Mirab, and then he takes her away, trying to get David to quit. All of these things are methods that Saul is using to get David to quit or to run, but David is seeing it as, this is God doing something in my life, and it is in all reality God revealing the character and the nature of King David, who was going to be the greatest king that Israel has ever known. And so here he gets deceived. Now, David could have went out and said, what's up with this? Kill 100 guys for Michal, just to be the son-in-law of the king. He promised her to me. It wasn't a part of the deal. I ain't doing it. What does David do instead? Brings him 200. Interesting. You remember what Jesus said? He said, listen, for you as a Christian, if someone asks you to go 1 mile with them, go 2. Now, that's an interesting passage, because during that time, who was in charge of the Jews? The Romans. If I, as a Roman soldier, were to come walking up and I were to say, Toby, you Jew, come over here. You carry my pack. It was Roman law that Toby had to carry it for 1 mile. And most of the Jews would do it with, hey, stinking, you know, Roman, I'll carry your pack, all right? And they would carry it 1 mile, throw it down on the ground. Say, there you go, you filthy animal. Jesus is saying, not only do it with a right heart, but go the extra mile. Then you will display your character, our character as Christians. And here we see it in the life of David, even before Jesus spoke it. I wonder if Jesus had David in his mind. When, you know, he went out, and not only did he went above and beyond what his king asked him to do. Even though he had been lied to, deceived, he had been thrown, he had spears thrown at him, he had been demoted, he had been disappointed. Everything that you could do to a man, Saul has done. And David still goes the extra mile. Is that convicting? It is to me. It's quite radical, if you ask me. And so Here we see Saul's plan of deception actually backfires. Why? Because God was with David, and David, his nature and his character was being exposed for all to see. Now they're beginning to see, look at what a scoundrel Saul is, but look at how David is behaving. This is interesting. These two are totally different guys. The flesh always behaves differently than someone who's walking in the Spirit. And so David passes this. And you know what? When it says right here in verse 28, I underlined or highlighted that in orange because it says, thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David. You know, I pray that others can see the Lord in us, especially our enemies. You see, because it's easy for me and you to, of course I know the Lord's with Toby. Toby can say, of course I know the Lord's with Rob, because we're brothers. But what about the people that are criticizing you at work? What about the people that are saying the mean stuff about you where you're at? What about your boss that has demoted you? What about that person that's tried to get you to quit because they don't like that Christian influence? They don't like your happy smile when you come walking in every morning. Everybody else is saying, give me that cup of coffee. And you're saying, I've already had two. I'm good to go. And they're trying, and they despise you simply because of Christ in you. Do they see and know the Lord is with you? To me, I think it's more important that our enemies know it, or it's just as important or even greater. And so here, I wonder here, and let me just throw something at you. As you can see, David passed all these tests, and I promise you, every one of us in this room, for me, I think it's a cycle. I personally believe that this is a cycle of Christian character development that all of us will go through. Maybe not necessarily in this order, but all of us are going to go through times where you're popular and people are praising you. And then you're going to go through a season where there may be rejection and persecution. And then there's going to be another season where, you know, there's disappointment. And all of us are going to be facing these tests until the day that we go be with the Lord. Because it reveals the content of our hearts, you see. And to me, I think it's very, very important. And I pray that we would never be like Saul, that we are so jealous that we can't rejoice in the success of others. And something that the Lord kind of shared with me as I was pondering on this and putting this together is that here we see that David passes the test, right? But something that I see here is that in the very beginning, when we come back to Jonathan, I find it fascinating that Jonathan, something that we may have overlooked about Jonathan, who was the next heir to the throne, he could have seen this thing going on with David and go, what's going on here? And he could have then sought to thwart the plan of God. But instead, Jonathan looked at this and he says, no, I'm going to walk in the Spirit also. I see the hand of God upon this man. I see God is doing something here. And instead of becoming jealous and instead of becoming resentful, I'm going to support what God is doing here. Because he could have said, whoa, 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 David, who do you think you are, pal? You don't get so close to my dad. No, 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 that's my job. Instead of becoming jealous, instead of becoming, if you will, trying to thwart or trying to stop what God was doing in the life of David, he got behind him and he supported this thing. You see, the flesh gets jealous. The flesh gets insecure when we see God doing something. And if we perceive that we're not a part of it, we think, well, I'm not quite sure how I feel about this. The flesh gets jealous. The flesh then tries to stop it. So when we are in the flesh, we will become jealous. We will become insecure. And if we see God doing something, God moving things around, and we don't like it, we'll become insecure. And we'll become resentful. And we'll become jealous. Instead of, like Jonathan, going, hey, man, I see the Lord's hand all over this. I don't, yeah, it might mean that I'm not going to be the next king, but if this is God's plan, I want to be fully behind it. I want to support it. I want to be a part of the change that God is making because I see that God is in control. That's a radical thing, you guys. It's a very radical thing that we see here. And so David's shepherd's heart, he was a shepherd, and God is revealing that to the entire nation. And so how are we going to deal with these kind of things, these different tests? Do you want to pass them? How do you do that? Well, we have to firmly believe that God is in control. And you have to trust. And you have to see when God is moving, even if it means that he's moving you out of the way to move something into a different position. Do you understand that in the kingdom, there's no such thing as up or down. It's all lateral movement. We look at it from a human perspective and say, well, how come he just got moved up? It's all lateral. It's all kingdom work. It's all servanthood, you see. As far as God's perspective, he says, no, I haven't moved him up or down. I've moved him over. Because I'm going to continue to use him here and her here or whatever it is. In God's perspective, it's all ministry, man. And so David passes, and that's why he's going to become the greatest king that Israel has ever known. So it's radical. So let's pray, shall we? Lord, thank you for this passage. What an amazing thing that we get to see here, Lord. And I pray for each one of us here tonight, Father, because I know that each one of us may be facing any number of these particular tests. Any number of us might be a Jonathan here tonight that we're watching you do something. I pray, Lord, that we would walk in the Spirit and get behind what you are doing instead of allowing insecurity or jealousy to get in the way. I pray, Lord, that if we're having spears thrown at us, that we would not throw the spear back. I pray, Lord, that if it appears we've been demoted, that we would do what we're doing as unto you, no matter what, and do the best at what we're doing, no matter what. Lord, let our Christian character be so seen that there would be no mistaking it. In Jesus' name, amen.